Hi, this is Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. I'd like to welcome you to this second podcast we have about Joseph and his brothers, reading in the chapters in Genesis, where Genesis takes a long time to tell a story of God's care and the importance of love between brother and brother, and treating all of us in God's family as just that, as family. Now, Genesis chapter 39 begins with Joseph having been rejected by his own brothers. They pretty much said that this isn't a brother. We're not going to treat him as one who has a claim upon us for love or compassion. And they sold him into slavery in Egypt, and then discovered that they had grieved their father terribly by giving their father the wrong impression. Well, not a wrong impression. They lied to him, gave him a Joseph's coat covered in goat's blood, and said a wild beast seems to have torn him. And so Jacob, the father of the 12 sons, one of whom was Joseph, is grieving for this one son. And so that's kind of the back at the ranch kind of part of the story. But this takes up what happens to Joseph, who's in Egypt. He's a slave and has been sold to Potiphar, one of the guard of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. In fact, he would have been the bodyguard. He would have even been those in charge who would execute the king's commands, and execute was one of the words. If someone, the king decided that someone's head needed to be brought to him, it would be Potiphar whose job was to do that. As it is, Potiphar also is a man of great respect and power, and so Joseph has been bought by someone of some standing. Now, the verses begin with, "Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him an overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had, in house and in field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him he had no concern about anything but the food he ate." Well, first off, we can look at this and say, well, Potiphar doesn't really have too many problems. He seems to have gotten to the top of the heap, and people would understand, even in those times, what it meant for somebody to be quite on top in an autocratic society. And he has slaves to do his bidding. And so now it's worth again to make another comment about slavery. It existed all over the ancient world. In some cases, it was very much like a low-rung job. Basically, in a subsistence economy, you were pretty much guaranteed to subsist because those who were masters over you looked upon you as something that they needed. Civil rights of any kind, even for the free, were at the whim of rulers and the rich and the powerful. And in fact, the very existence that somebody is the guard of Pharaoh, of course, watching over Pharaoh's safety, but Pharaoh's safety meant also making sure that anyone that Pharaoh disliked or began to fear or worry over could be threatened with force. So that hardly anybody was living what we would call a free or a middle-class life. Law codes were slanted in favor of the rich and the nobility. And so Joseph has landed in a place where he's respected by his master. He's valued by his master. He has many other people who have to treat him with respect because he is chief over the man's house. So Joseph at this point might feel that things have turned out rather well for him. Joseph's is a story about being watched over by God in adverse circumstances. There are other life stories and stories of our own that teach us this, that here was this prospect of bad employment or unemployment, and then the job came through. Here was this idea that we didn't know how our debts would be paid, and we somehow managed it. Here was this adverse circumstance or that sickness, and we found that God took care of us. The only answer we don't have to that question that we don't have an answer to is, why do we have the adverse circumstances at all? And Joseph's story is one of those that says there can be a plan from God. Sometimes it is revealed to us. Sometimes it becomes crystal clear of what God was doing in these very difficult times. What the Bible does not promise is that we will always have it made clear to us in this life what God was about. Now, there's also in this story this idea that Joseph now, having moved to somebody who probably is a great deal richer and more powerful than his father, would he be inclined to settle there and just not really desire to go back to brothers that hated him and the flocks of his father? Well, it's going to become obvious that Joseph longs terribly for his home and his family, which would mean that there are eternal values in home and family that go beyond, well, I can move here and have a nicer life. Our moving choices and choices of where we live and career in our own day, with the great deal of freedom that we have to exercise, also have the side that there are other values more than just getting by and having things that make us happy, comfortable, and safe feeling. In fact, is Joseph going to settle for less than God's best? He's the one who had dreams from God that said he would rule over his brothers. He would rule the sun and the moon, and many stars would bow down to him. Now, he has landed in a comfortable place. God is taking care of him. But is that all that he has meant for? And of course, you know, to write stories, or as they've done the musical, you know, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, we spend some time seeing that is Joseph still wishing to be somewhere else? And we can see that if we were in that position, we would say to ourselves, well, there's a lot going on here. There's even the day-to-day task that Joseph now has, since he is in charge of a large household and is doing a terrific job with it, that we could see that some of us in our souls would begin to forget where we came from and maybe even settle for less than having all that God wants us to have. This story also, in a very fun way, tells us some career and work advice. This is the place where we learn, well, wherever you are, do the very best job you can. Now, it does not say that God will always leap to your side when he sees you doing the very best job you can. But in terms of a story where, you know, God's action is behind this, and he is bringing his salvation through this story, we might ask ourselves, what is our role? Well, our role is never laid out for us, you know, do this, do that. God does not send Joseph messages every day saying, well, today's the day to go check on Potiphar's bean field. He doesn't do that. But God works in response to, he works with our character and our choices. And Joseph is a person of good character. He's honest, and he's a person who is making the right choices to, well, in this case, to make the best of the situation that he has, and particularly to not despair, even in view that it seems to be a situation that there's no exit plan to go back to have his home and family and see his father again. So many times in our work and careers, we can be in a spot where the only, you know, we're saying, this is not optimal, this is not what I want to be. Well, that's a bad situation. You can make a bad situation a whole lot worse by not working hard, by falling into despair, by boozing it up, or just engaging in all sorts of bad behavior. And Joseph doesn't do these things. Joseph does walk through here as a human example of one who is living right. At this point, this is, you know, the virtue of Joseph is on display and particularly trumpeted in chapter 39. In chapter 37, we were wondering if he was a bit boastful. We wonder about somebody who told tales on his brothers. Could he have done better? But now Joseph, perhaps because he has had this knock in his head, being sold into slavery, he discovered, you know, he is just alone. The only thing he does possess is his conscience, and his conscience is leading him to do a good job for the person that he has what we shall call employment with. But God has been watching over him. Not all people who worked hard in a household rose to the top. Not all people who have good character and are honest are rewarded with a promotion. But God is working alongside our character and our choices. Potiphar certainly looks on Joseph as an incredibly valuable asset. It wouldn't be wrong to daydream, what would it be like to have slaves? Of course, we don't want slavery in the world. What would it be like? And we might say to ourselves, well, how great, without paying a dime out except food and shelter, I would have people cater to me. They would bring me things. I would never have to work again. And people mostly found that slaves were an incredible headache. Having nothing to lose, they didn't work hard. They were known to steal. They were known to be lazy. They were known to hide when you wanted them to do something. to even have to order them about, bound you to them. And this was one of the truths that Christianity learned. Entering a world in the Roman Empire where there was a great deal of slavery. Slavery was done away with over the centuries and finally ended all over the Christian nations with this idea that we are brothers, even to the lowliest, and we don't own them, God owns them. And also that free people who can work for their own interest, work better. Now, continuing the story, we see that now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Oh, Joseph is handsome. We hear this. Okay. Verse 7 goes on and says, after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept anything back from me except you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. So now we find that Joseph is tempted. Now Joseph's refusal to compromise or to give in to, perhaps we would certainly call it lust, provides a contrast to a story that we skipped over in chapter 38 of Judah, who exercised all sorts of lust with Tamar and came off looking very badly. This, the placement of chapter 38, which interrupts the story from chapter 37 to 39, is at least on purpose to give us this contrast between the virtue of Joseph and the sort of person his other brothers seem to be. They have the growing to do. Joseph has another sort of growing to do because he has actual temptation in front of him. And also consider, he is a slave. He has had a run of injustices done to him, has every reason to despair of ever seeing anything like God's plan in his life come to pass. People in many times and places hearing this story would have applauded his cleverness in, the term was cuckolding his master. That they would say, wow, he is the slave, but look how he has come out on top. He even possesses his master's wife. Now, are people in impoverished or unjust circumstances excused for giving into lust? Now, I'm aware of a great deal of folks' tales that would have answered that very much a slave like this had done the clever thing to bed his master's wife. But mostly these tales are also tales of people without power. In fact, they're not so much looking for love, they're looking for power and control in their life, and they're fun tales, despite the subject matter, of someone overcoming by cleverness and guile and their intelligence, the brute force that is over them, and that's the purpose of those stories. But are people in adverse circumstances justified in just grabbing happiness, shall we call it, anywhere they can? Think carefully about your answer if you're asking yourself that. Because people follow that logic all the time. They're in a bad situation, and they may as well do something, anything, that will make themselves feel better. We medicate pain with bad behavior. So how do we compassionately say we could understand how someone might make that choice, but also hold that there's a better way? Well, one thing is the story of Joseph. It doesn't work out that Joseph beds his master's wife. It works out way better for Joseph that he does not. It works out better for Joseph that he does the right thing, even if it causes him temporary bad circumstances. And let's hear about the bad circumstances. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garments in her hand, and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant, whom you have brought among us, came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. Now, one lesson you might pick up from the story is this is a story of attempted, shall we say, adultery, of attempted seduction. It's something that comes up in adult life. I can assure you that, you know, from the experiences that I know of. And we might find that, first off, someone who would cheat on their husband cheat on their wife is by definition a person that of bad character. And people of bad character may also act out in many damaging ways. In fact, she doesn't love Joseph. If she loved Joseph, she would not seek at this point to harm him. Now, Joseph clearly states that there is a right and a wrong. And this is even before there was a Ten Commandments, including a seventh commandment, which said, do not commit adultery. This should tell us that Old Testament law may be expected to affirm what people knew in general about right and wrong, what is written in the moral sense of our hearts. That moral sense is one of the inheritances we have, we should say, as from being made in the image of God. God knows right from wrong. In fact, we might say we cannot know innocence. We cannot know the good that well, but we know good and evil in terms of our perception because we are heirs of those who ate of the fruit of that knowledge. We cannot know innocence, but we can strive toward good, and we have a sad experience of evil. Joseph also helpfully shows that this is an offense against God and against the husband. And it is to be hoped in cases like this that if one will not fear God, one will at least have regard for the partner that is being cheated upon. And that, or if there's no regard for the partner that is being cheated upon, if you can't bring your heart for that much compassion and common decency, to fear and respect God. There is Potiphar. He will be harmed by this. And harm is wrong to do, even to somebody who's powerful, who has perhaps committed violent deeds on behalf of his king. The adulterer and the adulteress, as we see them in entertainment or the news, is just that. It is entertainment for people who are looking at something that if they think about it, is actually quite terrible. And there's very little reflection on the wrong done to the cheated on spouse, on the break of trust, the many lies that must be told. And Potiphar's wife, anyway, now, as this story unfolds, and it is a story that could be told in any number of movies and soap operas, she is a wife who has turned to a lover, but now the love turns to hate. Indeed, it was not love. So she is laying a trap for Joseph. She is going to have her revenge upon Joseph by getting him into a whale of a lot of trouble. Verse 19 goes on to say, as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, this is the way your servant treated me, his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Now, Joseph still experiences God's protection after this loss of status. As working backwards through this, he's in prison, but he ends up being the best prisoner the man in charge of the prison ever had. And in particularly in these informal times, and prisons were not the large state and corporate ventures that they are, with a great deal of organization, rank, hierarchy, and troops of guards, the one in charge of the prison would put trusty prisoners in charge of the affairs and be very thankful that there were such trusty prisoners. So Joseph, he's not in a great house of a great official in Egypt, but he still is in a place where comforts are able to be acquired, where he is in reasonable safety, and also has to be seeing that, my God must be with me. You know, these words, God was with him, these words would stem from Joseph telling this story. How are we to know about Joseph and his time in prison? Now, why did Potiphar not execute Joseph? Egyptian law certainly allowed it. In fact, law about any ancient world and in many places in the modern world would allow it. does Potiphar doubt his wife's story? In fact, the story is even told that when he heard his wife's story, his anger was kindled, and it doesn't specify whom he was angry with. Very likely, it sounds as this, you know, we know that God protects Joseph, keeps him from being killed. We know that God puts him in a place where he can rise and know his protection. But also, God is, again, working through the character and choices of people that we have. And Joseph's character was so plain. And Potiphar, if he is a discerning man, knows something about the character of his wife. And so there just seems to be that idea that maybe Potiphar didn't believe his wife so much, but does put Joseph in a prison, but apparently in a prison where he, again, has some protection and some hope and keeps his life. Jacob and Potiphar are similar. There are people who do not give up on Joseph. They may not have Joseph with them ever again, but their love extends toward Joseph. Now, Joseph, of course, is in prison. I began this podcast by saying that slavery in ancient Egypt and other places, being it was a subsistence economy, and the choice between being a slave and not being a slave might be the choice between alive and starving to death, that certainly slavery did not have the racial component and the hatred component to it. Scorn, yes. Scoffing, yes. Disregard for those at a lower social status. That was all there. But we don't have much similarity to slavery as it was practiced in the United States before the Civil War. But now am I supposed to say, well, staying in the prison wasn't so bad? Well, good heavens, no. Egyptian prison would not have been a very nice place. Joseph would be a demonstration of that biblical admonition from St. Paul. If we have food and shelter, we shall be content. And Joseph is content, except with perhaps that whole idea that, you know, here I am, and God had a plan for me, and I just wish I could see that. And also an abiding love for his father, which will come out in the other stories. But he is in prison. This is a horrible circumstance. Several awful things have happened to him. You know, the hatred of his brothers, that caused him to be physically rejected, stripped, and thrown into a pit by his own brothers. And the heartlessness of selling him to slavers, the heartlessness of the slavers not to set another human being free, but to sell him as a piece of meat in the marketplace. All the experiences of a slave that are glossed over. And now he is put in prison. Now, I once knew a man, a fellow minister, who had a run of, well, you would call it bad luck, because it was one bad thing after another, and it left him in a very difficult circumstances. And then to bring this story that he had, very much more like the story of Joseph, by his own testimony, and he was a reasonable person who didn't seem like he would lie, he just calmly explained what some other people had done to put him in these bad circumstances. And this is not an out-of-the-way story. We find a lot of people who have been damaged in one way or another by someone else's greed or selfishness. And I asked him, because he was a nice man and I really liked him, I said, well, what is your take on this? This is really terrible. And he said, well, Joseph was in prison too. In fact, Joseph will have been in prison for quite some time, I might add, but his line was, Joseph was in prison too. And we can take his statement, my friend's statement, and put it alongside the story of Joseph and say, well, they're very likely. Well, no, there almost certainly, no, quite definitely is a plan from God in all this. God's care is present in all this. We find that we can be, you know, under God's care and know his love, even in some very difficult circumstances. It is a call to patience. The Bible does not have a long soliloquy by Joseph or a lament of his terrible experience and his sadness, though he certainly must have had them. Instead of lifting up his voice and complaining, the Bible points us to someone who has learned and is probably learning more about God's power and care. In our bad circumstances, there is the presence of God's power and care. So I want to leave you here as we conclude in Genesis chapter 39, the second podcast, remembering God's power and care. God also works alongside our character and our choices. We're not always promised, not by reading this story, that keeping our nose clean and doing a good job will always have a great outcome. We even have an answer there. You know, in a world, and particularly as we went through 2020 and nothing happened in 2020 that anybody liked, unless there was a baby born or somebody got married, you know, something with that eternal component to it, you might find that the Bible has stories that tell us about the difficult times that God's people do go through. And they don't even know why, particularly while they're going through it. But stamped on this is the presence of God. You know, God is the actor in this story. And his love is with us and will surround us. So please take that with you as your encouragement. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast looking at Genesis chapter 39 and the continuing story of Joseph and his brothers. And so I hope that you'll join us when the next podcast comes up, podcast 3. God bless.